Call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to this meeting of the Zone File Access Advisory Group. We are going to go ahead and get underway, and what I'm first going to do is read off the roll so folks know who else is on the line. If there happen to be multiple parties sharing a particular phone line and I don't call your name, please let me know. So online, we've got Francisco Arias, we've got Mark McFadden, we've got Vladimir Shadrinov, we've got Mikey O'Connor, John McCormick, Derek Andre, Rod Rasmussen, Barry Cobb, Susan Prosser, Piscatello, John Levine, Joe St. Sauve, and Rick Wesson. Did I not call someone's name who's actually on the line? Okay. So while we're talking about role and those folks on the line, I did send around yesterday statements of interest from two new folks that expressed interest in joining the advisory group. That would be Derek Andre from GTMG and Rick Wesson from Support Intelligence. You know, at the onset of this group, or maybe into the second call, we talked about the process or how we would address adding new members. And we never really did define how we would do that and if we would ever have a pure cutoff date. And I think some of you know from your involvement in the other advisory group that's running simultaneously with this one, the high security zone, we kind of took the approach with that group that we would continue to let people participate and that we would just keep the group open, recognizing that when we do add new members, what we don't want to do is have to, you know, drop back 50 yards and repoint up a lot of the discussion that's already been had. So with that said, when Derek and Rick reached out and they communicated, you know, partly directly to me and also through Jeff and Frakes, I went ahead and had them submit a statement of interest, which you all should have. And given both of their expertise in the field of, you know, the field of work that we're looking at and in general, you know, our industry, I personally welcome them to the group and their participation, and I hope the rest of the group does as well. So, and I see that Kurt Pritz is also joining the call. So, hi, good morning, Kurt.
Hey.
So, all that being said, I'm going to turn the call over to Mark just for a moment. I think, Mark, you wanted to say a word or two about Nairobi attendance, or did you not this morning?
No, I wasn't going to. I certainly can. I want to thank people who have indicated whether or not they're going to be in Nairobi for the CFA workshop. And if you haven't sent me a note, and I've got responses from 10 of you, if you haven't sent me a note, take a moment to do that. We won't take time on the call today, but just ship me a note that indicates whether or not you're going to be at the face-to-face in Nairobi or if you're going to be participating via teleconference. That'll be helpful. So, thanks, Craig.
Mark, can you announce who's confirmed their participation in Nairobi in person?
How about if I do this, Vladimir? After the call, if anyone else sends me some notes, I'll send something to the list that is a summary of what I've received. Is that okay with you?
Yes, thanks.
And kind of one more housekeeping note. I think some folks on the call are aware of a remote site that a number of registries and registrars and some other constituency members have orchestrated to run in parallel with the Nairobi meeting. And so I'm going to be participating in this workshop from that remote site. I think there's also the possibility, given the number of registries and registrars that will be in Northern Virginia for that remote session, that we should have, at least remotely, have a good number of folks on the line. I know from the HSTLD advisory group call yesterday, there were some folks who had gotten wind of the D.C. Registry event and were interested in receiving additional information. It's not something that ICANN is coordinating. It's just something that I've chosen to participate in. So if you'd like more information about it, I'm happy to put you in touch with the right person. Just send me an email after the call today, and I'll get that contact information to you. So moving along in the agenda, and I'll turn it over to either Rod or Vladimir at this point to talk about item number three, which is about improving use cases for the zone file access concept paper.
Yeah, first of all, I would like to thank everyone who participated in drafting the concept paper, which was posted on the ICANN's website on the 22nd of February. So the our next plans are to hold the zone for advisory group workshop in Nairobi. That will be on Wednesday, 10th of March, to which we have a number of items to sort out and to prepare. And then the public comment on the draft texts, on the draft concept paper will be accepted through the ICANN website until 8th of April. So as item 4, going forward to item 4 of our agenda, we will discuss it. What will be the next actions of the group in this period. So as to item 3 of our agenda, we have received some comments to the concept paper, and these indicated that that there are some items we wish to further consider. Specifically, the use cases that reflect the origin of the advisory group seem to be not very well presented in the current draft. So, and we would like to reach out to the group to discuss this. So, specifically. What would we like to include in the next version of the concept paper, in the next product we will come up as a group with, in regards to how organizations use the zone file for anti-phishing, anti-spam activities, for intellectual property research, and how people use the zone file for business purposes, or any other use cases we wish to consider.
Yeah, Vladimir, if I could add something in here as well. When the announcement went up on the ICANN website and kind of had the leading line of mitigating malicious conduct, I know there was some reaction from some in the group that they thought the title was. They didn't understand it, or they didn't understand the genesis of it, and you know the group itself was born out of this explanatory memoranda that was posted last October with the latest version of the guidebook that talked about a number of different tools or processes or mechanisms that could be used to mitigate malicious conduct in new TLDs, and the concept of centralized zone file access or enhanced zone file access was one of those ideas. So, as Vladimir pointed out, some folks that have reviewed the paper that haven't necessarily submitted comments to the public comment forum noted that, you know, we did a really thorough job of explaining the scaling issue and presenting a number of solutions, but that we didn't really speak to, you know, what's the use and what's the need, and how are the folks that need zone file access using that information? So, and that's what Vladimir was speaking to, which is how we get to these, you know, these different use cases. So with that said, I kind of defer back to Vladimir or Rod to continue with the section.
Yeah,
or maybe I'll keep talking a little bit longer.
I'm sorry, this is Rod. I'm kind of right in the middle of transition at the moment. I'm just listening. So go ahead, Vlad.
Yeah. What I thought maybe a good idea will be to draft some text on the origins of the group and what is the mandate of the group and how it is connected with the malicious conduct. Maybe we could use that in our further work.
This is Rod. When the original paper got written, there's a bit about how a very small amount of material in there about how various people have used the zone file for different things. And I think the breakdown here is pretty good as far as kind of the main ones that people know about. We're looking for to fill this in so we have a much better overview as to why we're talking about this within this context of mitigating malicious use. I think it's fairly straightforward. We just need to bring together some of the things that we've talked about in the calls in the past and really get them down on paper and make sure we've got input from the people who are actually doing it to fully catalog that. I think it's pretty straightforward, though.
Yeah, and when Rod and Vladimir and Mark and Dave and I met earlier this week, and we always have a kind of a pre-call planning session, we talked about getting volunteers to draft text for these three specific areas. Another way, too, would be just to have folks circulate their thoughts on the list, and then we, label clearly that it's text for the anti-phishing or anti-spam activities or other, malicious-related abuse activities. And if commenters, when you submit to the list, just label what you're writing about, between Mark and Dave and I, we can compile that information into the relevant text that we would then add to the concept paper. And that I think we'd also certainly plan to incorporate into the presentation for the Nairobi workshop. And I think we've probably got, the anti-phishing and anti-spam activities, we've got lots of people or at least a few people in the group who can, speak to that from an expert perspective. And I think we've also got good representatives from the business folks. On the intellectual property folks with regard to trademark issues, I don't know that we have that expertise on the call. And if I'm wrong, someone please speak up. We might need to do some outreach to someone beyond the group for that particular area. Is there anyone who's on the call now or knows someone who else is in the advisory group that thinks that they could speak to the IP concerns? Okay, hearing none, I'll take that as an action item to get some text on that particular topic. I think Susan and John Levine and others have written before about kind of the business, at least some of the challenges that consumers face in access. Maybe you as well could submit some recommended text on the business purposes.
So, Craig, this is Rod. I think several of us probably have a pretty good idea of what's going on the trademark side as well. So, it would be pretty good though to have a direct, user of zone files that's doing it purely for trademark research. There are several in the ICANN community. We could probably reach out and get some, even if they're not on the group, we can get some input from them. Because I know some of the uses and some of the ways that gets done, but not being a trademark attorney myself, I'm not sure all the tricks they may use. In regard to this, so see if we can get some.
I think we could easily reach out to the folks at the IPC and ask them either to put us in touch with a specific person or even as a constituency to get some feedback on this. And again, we're talking about a paragraph of text. We're not talking about a big document.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I, this is John. I would prefer, though, if they could find somebody who's actually doing it rather than a hypothetical argument about how they might use it.
Makes sense.
This is John McCormick. Most of it is basically cross-domain or cross-TLD comparisons, looking for the same string in various TLDs. The rest of it would be up to the legal people to pursue it. So I'm not quite sure if the IP trademark lawyers would actually be involved with the nitty-gritty of the subject.
You know, I'll reach out to folks that we know in the IPC and see if we can get connected to the right person to get us some information on this. This is not a hard a hard task.
Thanks, Greg.
So other, I'm sorry, Vladimir, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to think. Yeah, I think it's a good idea to reach out to the ICANN constituencies to source it for some other information as soon as we can't produce it.
Hey, Kurt, are you on the line still? Okay. So, just kind of wrapping up item three, we've talked about the anti-phishing and anti-spam activities. We've talked about intellectual property concerns. We've talked about business purposes, which I think generally kind of includes, you know, academia and research. Are there other use cases that we haven't discussed that we ought to be including here?
This is Rod. Are there? My reading of some things is that registrars do some things by looking at the zone file, and I'm not sure what exactly all those are. I don't know if we have any registrars on today, but I know that it's been mentioned that there's a lot of registrars that access the zone file. And then there may also be some uses that go into the kind of the technical side of running DNS that I'm not sure people are doing or not. But some of the people I know are getting zone files are definitely DNS related, you know, as in running major portions of the DNS system. So there may be some input there as technical aspect of why you want the zones to be able to do that.
Well, you know, we have Rick Wilhelm from Network Solutions in the group. He's not on the call today, so I'll send him an email offline. And James Bladel from GoDaddy had been on the group but had to bow out because of another commitment. But I'll also kind of put to him, Rod, the questions that you just raised. And then we do have, you know, we certainly do have some DNS experts in the group and on the call today. So if you all could chime in on the list, that would be great.
Okay. Anything else on use cases? All right. So the next item on the agenda is how the advisory group would like to proceed with the issues that have been previously discussed, but in the period between now and the end of the public period. So the current status is that discussing the cost model from the provider's perspective, we have reached out to several to some registries to ask for their cost data. We've got response from Newstar, and we are awaiting responses from some other registries. Maybe Craig would like to comment here. So what would be our plans for amendment of the existing cost model from the provider's perspective?
Yeah, so that's a good question, Vladimir. Brian Q from Affilius has told us that he will get us information, and I will follow up with him. And I got the same response from David Maher at PIR. So you know, I think all we can do is continue to reach out to them and let them know how important their contribution is to the work. And yeah, I if other folks have suggestions, that would be great. And certainly at the registry stakeholder group will have its constituency day meeting on Tuesday the 9th of March. And I know that zone file access is on their agenda to talk about. So that would be a good opportunity for Mark and me, who will participate in that meeting, to have, you know, some one-on-one time with all the registries present, and to see what we can do about getting them to be a little bit more involved in this process, particularly as it relates to the cost information. So, you know, other than continuing the outreach, I'm really not sure what else, you know, what else we can do, but definitely open to ideas.
This is Rod. I think we started down the path a little bit of taking the model that we put together from the consumer's point of view primarily, and starting to put some thoughts into how that would look from a, you know, an overall running the system as a central, you know, as a kind of a provider of a some sort of centralized model. And part of that, I think you could certainly do some modeling and say, okay, well, here's what we think it might look like, and what costs may be, and fire that over to some of the registries and, you know, who actually run some of this stuff, and get their opinions on where we are. So if nothing else, we can put together some straw men and see what it might be easier just to get feedback on assumptions and models that we can create as well.
Yeah, good idea, Rod.
Scenarios, how the zone file access, the new system of zone file access can be funded?
I'm sorry, Vladimir, can I actually just step back for a moment to the cost model? You know, we just spent a few moments talking about provider costs. Rod, as someone who participated in this subgroup with Mikey, and Mikey, you're online too, on the consumer costs, what do you think is the next step with that model, and either tweak, are we going to spend more time and energy on tweaking and revising that model, or at what point do we consider that subgroup piece of work complete?
This is Mikey. Let me jump in. I think at a minimum there are some action items outstanding, and one of them would be to do some sort of sensitivity analysis on that model, which I think I probably took but then got buried in pre-Nairobi stuff on other work groups. So I think that's one. Another would be to take a look at the assumptions, because, you know, we've got assumptions in there that are basically sort of a leftover from just wild guesses that I made just so I had a number to make the model go. And we might want to go through, either the subgroup or the whole group might want to go through those assumptions and take a hard look at those. And then in terms of the provider side, I'd be happy to bolt on a few more pages to that model once I had a better sense of the structure of the costs from the provider side. You know, I was trying to build provider and consumer costs into it, and not understanding the provider side, I sort of had to sketch that out hypothetically. But I think it would be pretty easy to add the provider side stuff if we had a few people to sort of hold my hand on that. So those are the three thoughts I have.
Okay.
This is Rick Wesson, and I apologize if this is a newbie question, but this is my first time on this group, and I do appreciate you guys letting me come to the table. In your models, do you see the consumer side growing? I understand that the formation of the group is to address how to deal with the producers, but is there a finite number or a bound that we're looking at for the consumer side of the model?
Rick, this is Mikey again. As model scribe, let me take a crack at it, and then others can chime in. We've got variables built into the model and an assumption right now that the consumer side triples, that we have about 500 consumers now and that it goes up to about 1,500. But, you know, the model is built to put any assumption we want in there. And the actual assumption that's in it right now is purely one of my swag guesses. So that's really what I'm sort of getting at when I say I think we really need to go through the assumptions that are in the model today and scrub them and see if they're realistic. But the model has the capability, you know, from a technical standpoint of accommodating growth in the subscriber side.
Sure, and I'm sure as technical solutions, you know, have shown that, you know, that there's frequently not an incremental cost on a per consumer basis for providing services. That's the great value of the internet. So if you could maybe outline, you know, why you saw a threefold, or you know, how did you derive that? Was it purely a guess, or you just wanted to have some upper bound on flexibility that the model needed to be able to apply for? And what I was going to suggest is that there's probably not a threefold increase in the number of consumers, and that if you look at Calm, it's probably one of the largest number of consumers, and that's probably a fairly reasonable upper bound. You might see some growth in that just because of interest developed by whatever access restrictions are placed on being able to acquire the data. But I would guess that the total number of interested parties in this kind of information at a zero cost model is you know in the lower thousands.
This is John Levine. Can I jump in for a minute? I actually went back and counted the number of people who have access to each zone. CommonNet is the highest with about 800, and it's growing by about one per business day. And it drops off very quickly from there. I mean, the Biz and Info have hundreds, and then the smaller domains, you know, go smaller. Most of them have a few dozen, and the smallest is .jobs that has one. So I think that if you look at as an upper limit, if you look at .com growing at one per day, you know, if that means to triple from 700 to 2,000, it means it would take us whatever that is, like 5 or 6 years. So I think it's actually not an unreasonable number, but it's also worth keeping in mind that some domains are much more interesting than others.
Hi, this is Dave Piscatello. One of the things that I'm curious about is, you know, is whether the current consumers would be able to continue to do the things they do without the same sort of, you know, dramatic growth in their own companies, and whether you'd see the same kind of evolution of lots of people getting into and increasing the competition in a market-driven space. And I'm thinking that, you know, if we get to a point where we have just such, you know, a remarkable number of domains, you know, for people to, you know, and a remarkable number of TLDs for people to constantly analyze and look at different threat landscapes and you know, spend considerable amount of time per customer trying to do even just simply brand protection, much less things like, you know, phishing and spam and malicious conduct. You know, if you look at the current players, would they be able to just ramp up and scale and deal with the growth in the market, Or would you see, as we've seen in other sectors like routers and switches and such, lots of new players in the game who would try to take the low-hanging fruit, grab part of that market, and you know, at least for a period of time, kind of see an explosion in consumers, which might consolidate over time?
This is Rod. I've got one thought on that. listening to folks talking here, and one thing I know, we're going to have some specialized TLDs that are tied to intellectual property concerns, given what I've heard about some of the plans for TLD propositions. And I think that will probably do a little bit of what you're talking about there, Dave, is that there'll be more law firms and things like that taking a look at those kinds of specialized domains, and there might be some other kinds of specialized domains that have some new concerns, et cetera. So, for example, if we do have a dot bank or something like that, some banks may take some interest where they don't today, or other industries where TLD is around there. So I can certainly see that. I think the main point in the model was to allow us to explore different, you know, scenarios and really come to, you know, under those scenarios, examine, well, what do the cost models look like? And if it's, you know, you could take a look and say, well, it doesn't matter whether you grow it by 3 times, 10 times, or shrink it in half, the number of consumers, it's, you know, on, you know, per consumer, what kind of costs are you looking at in order to support this? And one could actually take the argument that, wow, if it gets too hard, only a few specialized players are going to be able to do anything really meaningful as well, so you can certainly take consolidation. Again, that's why you model it and kind of come up with the various scenarios and see what the impacts are under the different types. So I think we need to do that kind of sensitivity analysis as really a next step after we've got our assumption set kind of baked in, whatever those are.
Yeah. Rod, this is Rick Wesson again. And I was wondering if you guys had split the model analysis into two sections. One was, the contractual issues, right? People have to sign a document and provide some details. And the technical, whichever kind of solution that entities use to distribute this, those are pretty lightweight, I'm assuming, and that they scale fairly well. And so if we look at VeriSign, from the technical side, you know, they have a service and they provision accounts, and those accounts are pretty static. They don't really change, and they have a server, and it distributes files, right? And that's the kind of technical side. And then the contractual side, where an organization has to submit some information, usually in paper form, and somebody has to put that into a system, and then create the accounts, right, for the technical side. And just from my experience in the process, I would assume that the most of the cost burden is going to be on the, handling the paper and taking whatever paper form information and making that electronic versus providing the technical side of the service. Have you guys discussed that and kind of divided it up at all?
This is Mikey. Yes, indeedy. And in fact, what I was thinking is that maybe after the call, at your convenience, maybe I could take you through the model just to give you a sense of what's there. But we certainly split out the essentially account management portion of the process is where most of the costs, at least with the current set of assumptions, most of the costs are incurred on that side rather than the technical distribution side.
Yeah, and there are a whole lot of different parts, moving parts in this. It's you've got change management and other things like that are in there. And I think the model kind of is, when the last version of it, we had a couple things we wanted to break out, and those are still open items, and those were looking at it from a setup cost perspective versus an ongoing maintenance cost where you have, you know, various things you have to do to keep things going. So that has still yet to be done as far as tweaking the models to accept that. But I think that, you know, the model is actually up and available, so you can pull that down too, Rick, and play with it, because I, you know, you've got great experience in dealing with this stuff from the consumption side, and the more inputs we get on where we're at with that, the better. I think that we want to get those changes made and do that sensitivity analysis to kind of get our bounds as to where we are for both the consumption and production side as close as we can, as you know, taking a look at the model with, you know, where we are today versus, you know, 50 new registries to 500 new registries or something like that, so we can present that and people could take a look at what the impacts really are, or what they could be, I guess, under these models, and get that into kind of the next level of what work we do on this.
Rod, this is Mikey. I haven't been keeping track of my own to-dos very well on this, but I'm happy to work on it if you or Craig or somebody is kind of keeping a tally of these open items and could just ship them to me. I'd be happy to run through the model and crank out another draft. I just haven't been focused enough on this particular project to
Mikey, thank you. I think that you know, we've put a lot on your shoulders there too. I don't need you to we don't need you to do all the work here. And we had that subgroup could certainly redo that. And we got very focused on getting the paper done and out so it could be published in time. So I think that we've got those action items in the minutes, and Mark or Craig probably have some of that available so we could take a look at that. I would suggest that we get our little subgroup, and if Rick or anybody else would like to join in that, in the kind of the fun with spreadsheets group, we can do that.
Now there is a monopoly for it.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That would be great. Rick, do you want to join our Hardy cost modeling band? I could add you on to the little list that we've got, and we could put you in there if you want.
That's affirmative, Mikey. Also, if you just drop me a note and tell me your availability, I'd be happy to go over the model with you this week.
I'm a retired guy, so every day is a Saturday for me. I'm free all day today, so I'll ping you by email, and we'll figure something out.
Yeah, I'm pretty flexible this week and next too. So.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
With regards to sorting out the assumptions that are in the cost model, maybe it would be a good idea to compile a list so rather than keeping them in the Excel spreadsheet. Maybe it could be a good idea to compile a list and like the category and the value that you used for the cost model, and then circulate it to the mailing list, so that all participants would have a opportunity to comment.
Yeah, I think, Vlad, what I would probably do is just restructure the model so that all the assumptions are on one page.
Yeah.
And that way, you can, you know, the trouble with this particular version of the model is that each page has assumptions on it, and I think in the next draft I might just pull them all to an assumptions tab, but I'll get something like that pulled together for sure. You to-do list people, could you add that to-do to my file, so I don't forget.
It's a privilege to add that onto your list.
Thanks, Mark.
So it's for the man who every day is a Saturday.
Yeah, I love every day.
Sounds like we've got a way forward on that part of it, at least.
Okay, shall we move on?
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Okay, in regards to the funding models for the zone file access, we have a section in our concept paper which probably needs some improvements. Maybe Mark could comment more on what information is required here and what we would like to add there.
Sure, Vladimir. That was very, very polite of you to say that it might possibly need some work. It needs a lot of help. It's the work that came into the concept paper at the very end. And I think one of the things that happened is Rod, early in February, had proposed a series of potential funding models, and that generated quite a bit of discussion. But as we were working on the concept paper, we sort of left that discussion behind. And I, one of the things that I'm hoping is that we can come back to that discussion now, perhaps a little more intensely in the weeks between now and when the public comment period is done. One of the things that's there is a description of what the models are like. But one of the things that is clearly missing are the implications of the implications of certain models. For instance, I'll give you an example of this. Some people have said that one of the things that we need to preserve is free access to the zone files. And other people have said, other people have suggested that there be a transactional cost associated with gaining access to the files. And there's a sort of a, I don't want to say a tug of war, but there's sort of a conflict between people's different philosophies about what the implications of the funding models would be. That's something that needs to be discussed among the group. I don't think that, I don't think we're asking the group for a decision here, but what we need is a little bit better description of what the models are like. And second of all, I think we need a description of what the consequences are of certain funding models. And so that's, and Vladimir, I'll stop talking here. I think that that is a place, that would be a good thing to have future agenda items on for the call.
Yeah, I think that for the call on probably the 18th of March, that it seems like we should dedicate, you know, a good chunk of time to further work on the funding scenarios. I mean, certainly get some dialogue started on the list, but then have a dedicated time on the 18th to talk about this as a group. Agreement from everyone.
This is Rod. I was going to kick in and say that I think that's a good plan there. I was also going to say that I'm looking for, hopefully we get some comments here from in the public comment period in the meeting in a couple of weeks. As I think when you get right down to it, everybody, what's the one thing that everybody always worries about? And that's the money. So I think that if we're going to get comments on anything, that's going to be it. So we'll want to incorporate what we hear from people at that point. But I certainly think we can model some of these things even without having necessarily figured out what the costs are, just from an implication perspective of, you know, if you change, you know, if you're going to support free with a centralized type of system, how are you going to do that? And, you know, the various impacts of you know, the models that we've come up with so far, which you have, you know, kind of different transaction versus fee, flat fee versus, you know, some other models, and what that might imply as to how people use the thing or might even game the system. We've never seen people game the system in the domain name world ever, so we might want to consider that.
This is Mikey. I'd just like to introduce an idea that I think Barry and I were talking about, and that is that maybe we have, and I'll try and write something for the list, but maybe what we have is a free model and a transaction cost model, and that the breakpoint between whether you get it for free or whether you get it for money is the cost to the consumer. And by that I mean, if you're a small consumer, you get it for free because your costs as a consumer are very low. But if you're a big consumer, presumably this fee would be cheaper than the costs you're incurring today. and that what we do is we sort of tax the payers to subsidize the non-payers. And I'll try and flesh that out a little bit. But I think there's a way to put together a pricing model that can continue the benefits of both, both the benefits of a free model for those who that's the most appropriate, and the benefits of a cost avoidance model for those consumers where that's the more appropriate place.
Mikey, this is Rick. I think that, you know, maybe we can put our heads together and I can help you with some of that. Because I certainly have had a few thoughts that I'd like to solidify before I just throw them out to the group. So I'm happy to work with you on that.
Cool. That'd be neat. Anybody else who wants to help invent this, feel free to chime in either by email or right now, and we'll get this put together.
Hey, Mikey, it's Susan, and I would like to be involved in that as well.
Okay.
Mike, you might also just send a note out to the list, because there are a lot of people who are not on the call today, to let folks know what you're doing, and if they're interested in being a part of it, just to ping you directly.
Okay. I've actually started writing action items down. I'll take that.
Okay, so moving on, anything else on the funding scenarios? Okay, so we then need to plan or at least provide some outline what the group is going to do between now and the end of the public period, public comment period, sorry, which is 8th of April. So, and what would be the best way to move forward and to be most productive here? So, my own thoughts of this is that before now in Nairobi, we need to prepare for the workshop. So we have a subgroup that is working on the PowerPoint presentation, and we would like. I think Mark drafted a plan. Was it Dave? An outline of this presentation, and we have already volunteers for the four of the five parts, and there's one part that has not been covered yet, which is just a second. Sorry, I have some slight problem here. Yeah, so if I think we need a volunteer to help us put together a few slides concerning the item 5, which should contain something about the cost funding and pros and cons of the models.
Yeah, Vladimir, it's Craig. Just to give a little some context for the folks on the call, because it's not coming across clear to me. The outline for the PowerPoint is something that Dave Piscatella developed and shared with Vladimir and Rod and Mark and myself. That the outline hasn't been shared with the group, and we kind of took it upon ourselves as either the chairs or the ICANN support staff to pull together the PowerPoint for the workshop in Nairobi. So I'd have to look at the outline again because I'm just not that familiar with the section that Vlad's talking about. But I think between the five of us that and maybe with Mikey's assistance because it's cost related, that we have enough manpower to get the slides done for Nairobi. We can certainly share the outline with the group just to let folks know the direction that we're heading. But I think everyone realizes that it's really the concept paper that'll be used to form the PowerPoint, and that is the sections of the concept paper, and then materials like we discussed at the start of the call around the use models that would be added. So again, to give everyone context, it seems like we should go ahead and just share the outline with the group and let you folks know that from a drafting perspective, I think that we've got it covered.
Yeah, this is Rod. I think we definitely want to share the outline and get any comments that people have on the group as well. And if we have the time in between putting together a draft slide deck and the meeting itself, might put it out to the list for any comments or suggestions as to how to improve it. But really, just trying to explain the nuts and bolts of what the group has done in the paper, so that a wider audience that hasn't been participating can get the gist of what's going on and the main points of where we're going and where we need public input from.
This is Mikey. I'm happy to devote a Saturday to that effort.
Sold.
I have lots of Saturdays. I don't exactly know where to insert this into this conversation, so I'll splash it in here. I think one more major bullet that we need to tackle as a subgroup is, or as an advisory group, is the governance model for whatever this gizmo winds up being. I don't want to go into a whole huge long detail, but you know, one of the things that we'll probably want to do is talk about, you know, is this something that's governed by ICANN? Is it governed by a new entity with representatives from the stakeholders? You know, how does all that work? And so just as a placeholder, probably not necessarily in the PowerPoint pitch because it won't be anywhere near baked yet, but for our drafting efforts, I think at some point we do need to describe, along with the costs and pricing, sort of the roles and responsibilities of the various parties that are involved and who would carry those, and wrap that all up in a topic called governance.
And I think that's going to depend on the model too, Mikey, because if you're going to just say, for example, align all the agreements and all of the access so that everybody's using the same model, whatever we call that, I can't remember off the top of my head. That's one set of, you know, kind of rules and compliance concerns and things like that, versus if you're going to have a centralized provider of some sort, well, in theory, you're going to have some sort of selection process for that, some sort of SLA, et cetera, then somebody's going to have to, you know, contractually enforce that. So quite a wide variety of governance issues to tackle there, depending on the model. So, yeah, I think that's absolutely important. It kind of goes probably into part of the cost factor as well. If you're going to have a regulation regime, you got to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it depends on whether it's a regulation regime or it's essentially a service, you know, that's provided. And depending on the view, but you get all kinds of moving parts. But I mean, one simple way to do this, and this is I usually spring these only after we've had four or five beers together, but I mean, one way to do this would be to outsource it to Amazon as an ebook. They have all the subscription capabilities. They have all the ability to monitor these things. You know, and all we would need is a board that would structure the contract with the SLAs and make sure that everything's working right. But You know, that kind of conversation I think we need to have at some point down the line here.
I think I just had a virtual cocktail when you mentioned Amazon running this whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You know, I usually wait for alcohol to soften your judgment before I throw those out.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, Mikey.
So, Mike, are you? This is Piscatella. Are you sort of suggesting that this could go the way of cloud computing, and it would be sort of zone file access as a service, as opposed to, you know, application as a service?
Yeah. I mean, now that requires another beer, but yeah, that works for me.
I understand the model you're conceptualizing. At first, I was sitting there going, "Calm on a Kindle," and trying to figure that.
Yeah. Oh, that's catchy. I like that a lot. Yeah, maybe we don't need beer to do this.
Okay. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour, so
I'm all done.
You know, Vladimir, this is Mark. I mean, one of the things that's really important to me is that we make a lot of progress in this period where the public comments are coming in. And it seems like we've got some really meaty things to do. There's the pre-Nairobi work that we have to do. Then there's the stuff about funding. And then the issues about governance. I think those are really good. And then I'm perhaps a little skeptical of Calm on a Kindle, but that's because all I've had is orange juice this morning. But one of my goals is that we stay very productive in this period in between now and when the public comments are back. And I think one of the things that will happen pretty naturally is after Nairobi and after the workshop, when you add that, the input that we get from that, together with the input that we get from the public comment process, we'll be in a good position to make progress after that.
Yeah. Craig, could you please comment what the workshop will look like? I mean, we have discussed that it will be a working meeting of the advisory group, but at the same time, it's an open meeting where the public is supposed to be present, right? So, I mean, thinking about how this Nairobi event could sparkle the public interest, and how it could, what amount of feedback should we expect from Nairobi and in the period after Nairobi?
Sure. So, and I think that when we circulate the format for the PowerPoint, this agenda that Dave pulled together, that will. And answer some of the question that you just posed. But I kind of envision, we've got 90 minutes allotted. I would be surprised, given our group calls have typically run, you know, between 60 and 70 minutes, that it would be probably challenging to go a full 90. It depends on the number of participants and the level of participation. But I kind of envision spending, you know, the first 15 minutes talking about giving an introduction. You know, what's the genesis of the group? What are we looking at? Why are we looking at it? And then really using probably the next 30 minutes to delve into, you know, at a high level, the components of the concept paper and some of the considerations that have gone into its development. And you know, typically during a public forum, people are either asking questions throughout or there's, you know, 10 or 15 minutes left for Q&A at the end. I'm guessing that, again, depending on the number and the level of participation, the Q&A could either go really quickly or it could actually, you know, take some time. I'm thinking that we might actually have a good number of registries and registrars chiming in from this remote DC location, so we might want a lot for time. So kind of to recap, I'm thinking a 15-minute introduction and overview, probably a 30 minutes on the concept paper with a pretty good emphasis on the models, the solutions that we presented, and you know, specific considerations about each model. I think we could spend some time on the specifically on the cost model, and you know the ability to or the variability that's in the spreadsheet that's posted on different number of consumers and different cost factors. So you know we could spend you know 10 minutes or 15 minutes just on that. And I think we'd quickly find ourselves at the top of the Q&A session for another 10 to 15 minutes, and that would be our time. So that's what I think we've been discussing, at least amongst the co-chairs and ICANN support staff. Certainly, if other folks on the call want to weigh in on the thought process behind the workshop, you know, I turn the floor over to you right now.
This is Mikey. The only thought I would add to that is leave enough time for people to ask questions and react. I think that it's always frustrating to sit and be talked to straight through an hour like that with no opportunity to offer comments, questions, and so on. I know that it, sometimes you run the risk of it turning into a madhouse, but in a sense that's the whole purpose of this, is to float the idea and get the sense of the larger group as to whether it's got legs or not.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a unique opportunity to involve the public in the process. So I think if on our regular calls we are focusing on the subject and we are discussing the specific solutions or specific subjects related to the zone file, here in Nairobi we need to focus on public participation and give as much attention to the audience and to the questions and answers they are giving. I think that's the way we could make the public involved and get probably some review of the stuff we made and some additional ideas of how the work can be improved.
Another newbie question. I know that call's almost over, and I just wanted to ask one thing that I hadn't seen or heard about was, has anyone discussed with the registries about where they see the zone file becoming intellectual property of their own? And this is more about a question of what is the time or how the frequency of the generation of the zone file. For instance, today, I think 12 hours seems to be what the policy is. Zone files are generated on a 12-hour basis. And then the concept behind this group is about zone file access, which is something that's actually legacy. We don't really have zone files anymore, although we did 10 years ago when we were talking about all this kind of stuff. And the actual zones that are served up are really streams of information. And so at what point, what is the time of an update that this group is considering? And have you discussed with the registries where they see the concept of access? Is it at a 5-minute incremental level with .com for a fee? And 12 hours for free. Has that conversation been initiated with registries to understand where they see this from a policy perspective? And if not, would you be interested in, you know, some of us going out and having that conversation?
I'm not. I believe that the frequency of the zone file update is not 12, but 24 hours, as specified in the zone file access agreement. And Craig, would you like to comment on this?
I will, but I would actually have to dig up some information. I'm trusting that Rick's information is accurate, but let me look up something online real quickly, and I'll be right with you.
And this is Rod. We definitely have discussed the VeriSign registry service. There's a Rapid Zone File Update registry service, and really outlined in the paper and in our discussions that what we're talking about here with this group is the continuation of the current model of daily, or I guess twice daily, depending on what the actual rule is, access, and that this would in no way compete with, impede, or what have you, any registry innovation. And the registries have been involved in this conversation along the way as well. So I think they're pretty aware that we're definitely not trying to change the rules on them as far as what the access interval is. That being said, there's certainly an opportunity for registries, if they're going to offer some sort of enhanced services, to take advantage of whatever model is put forth here. And that's been discussed, too, at least on a theoretical level, is that you could take, if you have a provider like this, you might be able to do something with the registries to allow them to take advantage of that distribution model. But that's kind of a, you know, wouldn't this be neat, too, kind of thing versus anything serious as far as building any policy or what have you around it. But I think that the issue of access intervals and registry services that are not necessarily part of the current Zone File Agreement have been pretty well covered and, you know, kind of compartmentalized into a different issue at this point.
So is that part of the terms of the group, is that you would maintain this 12-hour or 24-hour, whatever it is, by a contract access agreement, that there wouldn't be any change to the timeliness?
That's the assumption, that because we're basically taking a look at the current model not scaling well under, you know, with hundreds of registries, how do we solve that problem? Now, we also do talk about if you want to make changes, that's possible. That comes into more of a policy realm than a solving the scaling issue realm. So, but it's certainly something we've discussed and can be included as I think it already is to some extent included as part of the discussion, but not necessarily what, you know, we're focusing on, the problem we're focusing on trying to solve.
Yeah, I'm looking at some information that's online in some of the registry agreements, and at least in the Zone File Access Agreement, which is Appendix 3 for most TLDs, it says that consumers are allowed to download the Zone or the Zone File data once every 24 hours. What I'm trying to find, and I'm just not familiar with it off the top of my head, is if there's an obligation, what the obligation is for the registries to be updating the Zone.
From practice, it's about 12 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any language that was a requirement for an SLA or any sort of thing on how often they have to change it, how often they have to publish it, what the availability is on publishing it, or any of those types of things. And that's certainly been one of the other areas we've talked about with, you know, a future model, is that you might be able to tighten some of that stuff up so that there actually is some, you know, like some common understanding of what things are supposed to, how things are supposed to work across all registries.
Well, there's a registrar influence on that, right? I mean, there's a population chain because, you know, if the registrar accepts a name and doesn't complete the transaction with the registry for another 5 hours, you can't set an SLA on the registry for 4 hours without setting a similar SLA on the registrar.
Well, I wasn't really referring to that, Dave. I mean, that gets into kind of a propagation SLA type thing. I'm just talking about just access to the file itself, as far as, you know, can you get it, and how long, you know, how often do they update? Now, if there's no say there's a tiny registry that has, you know, a few hundred names in it, obviously there wouldn't be changes every day. So, you know, there it would be much more around, you know, just general access provisions, whereas somewhere else, yeah. You have updates.
Well, we're trying to deal with two different problems, right? One is making it available for download, and the other is concurrency. With, you know, I mean, how accurately
right.
does the file that you download, relate to the file that is currently being currently published and and used for name resolution. And I think that's a different. It's certainly relevant to what we're doing, but I think it's a different problem that we haven't quite addressed yet. And I think there's a much broader implication than just zone file access.
Yeah, I agree. And there's currently no real language around that, right? And if I'm VeriSign, I could supply a COM file from 1999, and it wouldn't be relevant, but it would be supplying its own files. So, that's not really spelled out. So, fortunately, they do provide a current file that that's something to consider with new registries.
This is Joe Sansmay. My concern is that since the domains are going live in real time, having a 12 or 24-hour delay can really go ahead and be a hindrance if abuse is what we're trying to fight.
Exactly. It
gives the bad guys a window in which to operate.
But I think that falls under, anything that we would discuss, and Craig would know best, but my gut tells me that anything we would discuss in that area would actually be something that has a contractual implication between ICANN and the registries, and would have to be formulated in one of the agreements.
Unquestionably.
Well, not necessarily. It could, depending on how the consumers are for these different data sets designed and as well as the model, it could be a market-driven approach. You could have certainly a baseline that all the registries have to, a minimum that they have to adhere to, and different tiers for other market opportunities. And so
what I'm talking about is the baseline, Rick. I'm talking about the baseline, not the market opportunity. Because as discussed, there is no baseline, at least none that we can quickly identify in real time on this conversation.
Right, and where I was trying to take it was that if these issues haven't been discussed and you wanted someone to write terms of reference about historical practices, current day practices, what the difference is in the contract, what people do, I might be able to provide some clarity around that. But I didn't know if that work had been done, so I asked.
I'm sort of in favor of the keep it simple approach. We have one fairly one task sort of fairly well down the line, and I'd rather see us put the peg in the hole and then move on to the next peg. But that's just a personal opinion.
I think there's separate issues there. I mean, where are we at currently with what people are actually doing? That's actually a question for the registries, I'd say, more than anything else. And we could see it as consumers. We could see things that registries themselves know what they're doing as far as update schedules. The other side of it is we've got certain services that are already approved, right? The Rapid Zone Access is an approved ICANN, value-added service for registries, whatever they call those things. To offer. So, I mean, we've got a hard case where we have a potential conflict between wanting to do something, that changes the rules that comes up against a service, which will get very hard pushback from the registries, obviously, since they're, either monetizing it now or plan on doing that. So to be very careful here in how we approach that.
Well, we've already gotten that pushback when the registry stakeholder group submitted public comments, the last version of the guidebook specific to centralized zone file access. One of their points was what you're looking to do is, I don't know if they used the word anti-competitive, but they said it certainly flies in the face of their value added for a fee service.
Right, which is what I was trying to understand was what's the time interval that we're going to discuss as a zone file versus the actual updates. And that really drives use cases. There's a completely different use case as well as technical requirements for providing the service for a streaming feed that's a 5-minute delta on the entire activity of 50 registries versus a 12-hour delta. And that might be spread across many different time zones with different, nobody delivers on the same hour, although they are 12 hours apart, and that we should at least discuss that that these different activities exist, as well as the different times, and why we chose the time cut that we are for this particular service, as that would help delineate why something is free versus value-added service that a registry offers. And it's my understanding that only ComNet have the certification to provide that service, rather than all registries.
Yeah, VeriSign is the only registry that's been approved for that registry service.
And each registry has to be approved for it, and none others have applied as far as I know.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say, though, that Neustar and affiliates and the rest reserve the right to apply for such a service. So, I think we've been going with the assumption of the maintaining the current model, and that's what's baked into the model assumptions and all that. And certainly, as a value add kind of thing, or as a future thing, it's been put in there as a consideration, but the work is concentrated on the current model and the current kind of state of play as far as the updates go.
It sounds like we've got another agenda item brewing for one of the upcoming calls.
Yep.
Well, we're now 80 minutes into our call, and I think we ought to probably wrap up unless other folks have issues that they want to raise. I do want to highlight that we're not going to have a call on March 11th. It's just obviously doesn't make sense if we're going to be doing the workshop on the 10th. So the next regular call will be on March 18th. Same dial-in information as always, and we'll continue to provide the agenda a day or two in advance.
So are we skipping? We're skipping next week then too, Craig?
Next week is the 4th.
I don't have a problem with that, since I know people are already leaving for Nairobi then, the ones that are leaving.
Yeah.
We might want to have, if people, we've had a lot of topics come up today that we might be able to get a little bit more work on. If there's interest in the group, maybe we should do a poll of the group and see what people want to do for next week or not.
We could also use the time on the 4th if people are interested in going through the PowerPoint, not necessarily presenting it, but we could use that meeting, that call time, as an opportunity to make some final tweaks if the group feels it's of value.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. If nothing else, for those of us who are working on it, we can use that time, and whoever is really interested and wants to throw some stuff in on that, we could use that time just to go over it.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea for the 4th, and well, obviously we won't have the 11th, and then we'll be back on the 18th.
So then, thanks everyone for participation.
Thanks, guys. We seems like several of us have some action items around things we need to either circulate to the list or questions that we need to communicate out to other constituencies. And as soon as we get the feedback, we'll post it to the list.
Great.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, bud.
Great job. Thanks.